You're listening to the Web Marketing Adelaide podcast. We give you the tips and strategies to help you utilise the web to get more traffic, leads and sales for your business. Now here's your host, Nick Morris.
Welcome back to the Web Marketing Adelaide podcast. I'm your host, Nick Morris, and today we're talking about lean startup methodologies. We have a special guest, Trevor Glenn, who's an Adelaide-based software consultant from Surugo. G'day, Trevor. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Nick. Yourself?
Pretty good. It's good to have you along for this video interview. For my podcast listeners that are listening to the audio, I'm now doing a lot of video interviews. So if you head to our website at www.webmarketingadelaide.com.au, you can actually see the video version of this interview, which will also be up on YouTube. And I can see Trevor there ready to go. So I think we'll launch into this by, I'll get you, Trevor, to just explain to us a little bit about yourself, what you've sort of done to get you up to this point, and what you're sort of working on right now.
Yeah, sure. No worries, Nick. Thanks. Thanks for having me on today. Look, my background is I was a software engineer at Motorola for a number of years, and when they decided to shut down the software center, we had a team there that worked pretty well together, so we thought we'd start a software business. Along the way, we found a number of things that we could do well together as a team, and some failings that we had as a team as well. But most importantly, what we've come across over the past few years, or what specifically I've come across, is this lean startup idea, and how a lot of the things that we did along the path that perhaps at the time seemed like the right idea would have, if I'd known about the lean startup back then, would have been a lot better. But basically, we started a software company. From that, we decided to try and develop a product, and that product that we developed is an online backup solution. That's a distributed backup solution. So rather than have a single server that stores the backup, they're distributed around a network, so utilizing spare hard disk space of a community of users. So we did a lot of great stuff. The software that we made is fantastic software. But in terms of market entry strategy, it's where the lean startup really hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't nailed. The process that Eric Ries describes in his book is fantastic, and I think a lot of it applies to what we could have done perhaps a little bit better as well. So,
great.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Just to expand on that, the Lean Startup Lean Startup is a book by Eric Ries. I haven't actually read it yet. It's sitting over there on my dresser ready to read. But it's a set of sort of methodologies. And did he sort of invent them, or were they exist before and he sort of was one that popularized it? Or how did that sort of fit in?
From my understanding of the background, and certainly I'm not an expert on Lean Startup. It's just my own reading of the book and my own understanding of the principles. But look, the Lean principles were, I believe, developed at Toyota in Japan in relation to manufacturing. So really what that's about is cutting out a lot of the fat in the manufacturing process to ensure that there's a minimal amount of waste and a minimal amount of processing that occurs prior to them actually doing the manufacturing. So in that regard, I think what Eric saw and what he's applied and what others have applied even before him and didn't perhaps give it that name was a way of applying that to a startup of a business. And that can apply, I think it applies really, really well to software businesses and especially web startups, but can apply across the board as well.
Great. Well, let's move on and sort of start off the topic with why don't you explain a little bit about what the lean startup approach is and sort of what it's about.
The way that I look at it, and my interpretation of the book, and certainly as you say, you haven't read it, and I'm sure most people haven't to date, but I definitely recommend a read. It's not a long book, but it's very well written, and you can get the concepts pretty quickly in my mind. But Lean Startup is really about developing what your minimum viable product is. And so by minimum viable product, what's the thing that you can get out into the market as quickly as possible to start either making money, ideally, but at the very least, learning what it is that your market needs before you can get to the point of selling it. So a minimum viable product, I was reminded, actually just this morning, I was watching a bit more of the Dropbox story, which is a great example of lean startup, of an application of lean startup. They were actually talking in there, the founder was talking in a video about the fact that a lot of the lean startup stuff they did, some of it was deliberate and some of it they actually just accidentally came across as well. But in there, his minimum viable product was actually a video that he posted on the Hacker News site, where he just basically did a screen grab of him using the technology or using his product and invited comments from people. And so straight away, he was interacting with the market and finding out from the market what it is that they would be willing to buy. And so what that boils down to is getting your minimum viable product out there as soon as you can. And then from that, following a process of building something, measuring what you're doing and learning from it. So up front, you want to ask yourself some key questions. What is it that people are going to buy? What is it that people might buy that are in my space? And start investigating that. That's not desk work. That's actually putting something out there and getting people to either put their email address on the line. So another thing is having a landing page where people can actually go in and say, yes, I am interested in this product when you launch it. By doing that, you can actually see that there is an appetite for your product out there in the market. Having a landing page as well where you're actually having different types of wording, so finding out what it is that your market, the type of language they use as well. But at every step along the way, you want to be building something, measuring what it is that you're building, measuring that and learning from it. And in the book, they talk about that in the early stages of a company, it's not actually about the number of dollars that you have in, but the sort of learning points that you have. So what is it that you've learned along the way? Obviously, it all needs to turn into a business eventually where you're making money. But along the way, it's actually you can be showing progress, not by how much you've sold, but by how much you've learned and how closer you are to having something that is of interest to the market and that they're willing to pay for.
Yeah, that makes good sense, and it seems to be concepts that every business should follow. But is it specifically for technology type businesses, startup businesses? I mean, you mentioned that it can apply to other businesses too. Yeah. Can apply to every business, or in your opinion?
Look, I think there are facets that can apply to every business. I think the build, measure, learn sort of idea can definitely apply to probably every business in some way. The value of it to a technology startup, of course, is that you can get a web page up in 5 minutes. You can change the content of that web page in 30 seconds. So your time to market and time to be able to react is a lot quicker than, say, a manufacturing business, where if you were trying to get out, you know, a widget and build a widget and find out if people were interested in that widget, even just the idea of getting to a prototype stage where you might deliver a prototype to 20 different people and get their opinion on it, that's a lot costlier than getting, you know, the next Instagram website created, for example. It's a lot easier to do that with software and technology, so, or specifically software and the web. So our industry in that regard are probably better placed to make the most of the ideas of Lean Startup. But I think the other thing that they talk about in the book, excuse me, is that startup doesn't necessarily mean someone working out of their garage. The idea of it's really about being a lean entrepreneur, and entrepreneurs can exist within larger companies too. You know, the term intrapreneur is usually given to those sorts of people, and those intrapreneurs can actually, given the right structure, go out and do this process within a large company as well. So if you think about startup, not necessarily in terms of a business, but in terms of an idea, and it's about, so an innovation, and about applying those principles to taking that innovation to market in a way that actually gets the most amount of customers quickest is really the end goal.
Yeah, that all makes quite a bit of sense there as well. I guess the other thing with the web is that it makes the measurement part of it easier.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. If going back to a manufacturing example and giving someone a widget, measuring that is hard. Did they play with it for an hour or 2 hours, or did they give it to their son and they played with it for 3 hours? And measuring that's a lot harder with a physical device. And you know, there's a whole industry around that sort of process. Whereas you're exactly right on the web with tools like Google Analytics. And even tools like Unbounce is one that I've come across recently as a landing page tool. And there's a lot of them out there, so you just Google them, they're fine. But within minutes you can find out that information.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the advantages of the web. Mm. So when I sort of first heard about this lean startup approach and lean startup methodologies, I was actually hearing about it from podcasts and things where they were talking about it more for an established business who's launching a new product.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of make that clear or get your thoughts on that, that it's not just for someone starting a new business, but it can also be used for an established business who's launching a new product or perhaps some other new aspect.
Definitely, and I think it's, to be honest, the way that I see this, and that's where I was talking about an innovation, and an innovation can be simply even a new process. If you wanted to trial a new process of how you do what you do, following the lean startup methodology is a great way to do that. And it really is just about testing in a hypothesis in the market to see if it's actually going to stick, if you want to put it in another way. And that can apply to any new business, to any new product, to any new process, to any new service. Any of those can take some of that lean startup ideas and apply it to their business. There's probably got to be some ecosystem of support around that. In the book, they talk about, I think it's Intuit is the name of the company. I might be wrong on that. But basically, I think they're a pretty large software vendor in the US. I think accountancy type software, and they might be as big as sort of 15,000 people, but they, whenever they bring a new product to market, follow this lean startup idea and methodology because it's a great way to bring a product to market. And so around that, their management structures support it and understand that there's got to be some give and take around dollars. It can't be just all about next quarter's results, because what you're trying to do is get something out in the market and get some feedback around what it should be doing before delving too deep into a product development.
Yeah, great. We're going to move on now. You actually recently gave a talk, I think it was at the Lean Startup Meetup in Adelaide, yeah. And you wrote a blog post about some of the not so lean mistakes you made with your business. And we just want to perhaps talk about a few of them. The two I sort of singled out that I think we thought would be interesting were, one, listen to your market, and two, expect failure. So could you just talk us through a little bit about the listen to your market aspect?
Look, it comes back to the build, measure, learn thing. One of the things that I think the mistakes we made is that we thought we knew what our market wanted and went out and developed a fantastic piece of software that solves it for that imagined market. And as we got it out there, we realized that whilst there was a market for that, maybe they weren't willing to pay as much as we needed to charge, or they weren't willing to use it in the way that we thought they would use it. So really listen to your market, in my mind, is really about the fact that you actually need to be out there talking to the market every step along the way. Don't invest too much time in building this wonderful software or wonderful system that nobody's ever going to use. If you don't know what the market wants and what the market's actually willing to pay for, then it's absolutely irrelevant to how good your software is. And really that's the key part of that listen to your market is to not only listen to them, but actually explicitly go out there and solicit their feedback as early as you possibly can. And we did do some of this through, you know, betas and ensuring that, but we weren't asking the right questions. The questions we were asking of our market was, you know, does this product work for you? Are there any bugs? When really what we should have been asking was, would you be willing to pay money for this? And at what point, what's missing from it that would make you want to fork over your cash? That's really at the end of the day for a business is what matters, is people paying for it, not how many users you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that sort of relates to that is often seen described that people can say that they'll buy a product, but actually buying a product is a different sort of thing. So if you can, I don't know, are there any strategies that you're aware of where you can kind of bridge that gap between what people will say and what they'll actually do?
Well, look, a great way to do it, and it obviously it depends on your product, is ask for a credit card up front, a credit card number. So even if you don't have a product per se, or that you've got a product but you don't think it's exactly 100% there yet, is to actually ask for a credit card, is to get people to pay for it now. What they're paying for and all of that is all something that you can test. So are they paying for a 2-year subscription? Are they paying to get into the beta program? That's one way around it. It is a tough one. It's one that I don't think there's a catch-all solution for, but it really, I think, if you're solving their problems along the way, one would hope that the money comes with that. So if you're actually solving a market need, you'd hope that eventually that would relate into dollars. And so if you've got that right and you've listened to your market and you know what it is that they want, you can find that out. And then you can do some testing around that as well. So even if you get the product to a point where you are, yep, we're happy with this as a product in the market, you can then set different price points and say, well, okay, let's try it at $300 a month and see what sort of results you get. And using that information, we'll be able to help you determine what's the sweet spot for that particular market.
That seems to work out. For businesses when they're not... when they sort of before that, when they're trying to just speak to the market, what's a good way to get out there and do that? I mean, I've heard mentioned before that you should do lots of cold calling to your target market and to just sort of get them on the phone and sort of talk to them about their problems so you can really understand it. Is that a good strategy, do you think? And are there any others?
Yeah, look, I think it is. I think certainly, a location like Adelaide as well is quite good in some regards because getting access to some of the people, key decision makers in companies, can be relatively simple because of the size of the network here in Adelaide. So everybody knows everybody, as you would know. So eventually, you know, it doesn't take you too long if you want to talk to the head of XYZ or the head of the South Australian branch. Obviously, that's what the market you're trying to enter into. So having those conversations is really, really important, and especially if you want to try and find someone who can help you develop the product to help you be your channel to the market. Having early conversations with those sorts of people and people who are actually talking to the market that you're selling to day in and day out. So they might be selling a product that's similar to what you're proposing. Maybe not a competitor, but something that is complementary. If you go out there and talk to them and find out, because they will know, you would hope, what their customers' pain points are and be able to kind of cover off a large set of customers with potentially one conversation. Look, other ways that you can do it as well are surveys. Again, coming back to the Dropbox example with the video, if your audience or you know that you need to get early adopters on board, find the areas on the web where those people are having conversations. If you're selling something that relates to overclocking your motherboard, well, there's a overclockers website, a forum there, so go and talk to those guys. So being smart about it and using the the internet to do, and social media is another great example of that. And I, in my opinion, forums come into social media in that regard as well. They're just a little bit different flavor of it. But going out there and using and finding out where your customers are talking, even if you're just watching the conversations that they're having there, you'll find out a lot about what their pain points are by LinkedIn groups, now Google Plus communities, these sorts of environments that exist now. Utilize those to find out what it is that your market is saying. So it does depend upon what your market is. If you've got a consumer product versus, say, an enterprise product, there'll be a different communication style. So they will communicate in different ways, and you'll have to ensure that you use the language of those different communities. But generally, find out where it is that your market talks and get involved in those conversations.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, obviously. Another thing I've seen, and I think you sort of briefly touched on it towards the earlier on in the interview, was you can get these sort of email capture things that you put up on a website, and then you just sort of drive traffic to it, perhaps by AdWords or some other paid mechanism, and it might be like a simple question related to some sort of product that you're thinking of developing, and then the idea is what kind of conversion rate can you get to people putting in the email address, which is, you know, it's not a payment, but an email address is something that's semi-valuable, so people don't just give it out willy-nilly.
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so at least you've got some sort of investment there. So I guess that's another thing you can do. Did you have any experience or any ideas on using paid traffic?
Another book that I would recommend that's along the same lines of the Lean Startup in terms of thinking about your business in a different way is The 4-Hour Workweek, and definitely recommend that as another book to read that talks about a lot about sort of paid search and sort of setting up a niche. And I think really paid search is best served for a niche. With our product at one stage there, we had online backup. As a term, you're looking at, this was probably a couple of years ago now, you're looking at $6 a click. So if you're selling a product that is $60 a year and it's $6 a click, you're going to need more than, you know, 1 in 10 people to sign up to from clicking on your ads. So that might be an expensive way for you to get traffic. However, if you've got a niche product that people still search for, but is not highly bid on in the Google AdWords infrastructure, then you've got a better chance of getting some conversions happening there. And that's, but obviously it has to make sense. And that's where you've got to make sure that you marry up your AdWords content with the content on your website as well. So definitely it can work. I haven't personally been involved in projects that have done it successfully, but if you read the 4-Hour Workweek, there's some great examples in there of people who've done just that.
Yes, I just thought I'd reach back and pull out the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, which I do have here. Oh, it's backwards on the screen there. I'm glad to say that I have actually started this one, unlike the Lean Startup, and so far so good. It's really quite well written and interesting. Let's move on to the second point here, expect failure. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
Yeah, look, in some ways that's the our background as software engineers working for a large software organization, quality was of the utmost. And releasing anything that had a bug in it was a big no-no for various reasons of, you know, especially at that point in time, once you get a mobile phone or a base station out in the wild, having to do patches on those things to fix bugs is not easy and can be quite costly. If you could imagine a phone recall for an organization to bring back a mobile phone to be able to reflash them all to fix a bug, just not going to happen. For an organization like that, makes sense. But we probably took too much of that methodology and applied it to our business, where a backup product has to work. absolutely no doubt about it that it has to work, but it has to work for the things that people need it to work for. So getting it out there, it doesn't have to be perfect. People expect that things are going to go wrong with software. Sadly enough, it's the case. But what's more important is that you put something out there knowing that something's going to fail, because you wouldn't have thought of every single mode that somebody's going to use your software. Again, if you're doing a consumer sort of solution, guarantee you get it out there and someone will use it in some way that you never even thought of. You know, they're still running Windows 95, or they're, you know, trying to install it on their laptop that's only got 1 megabyte of space left. You know, so things like that you probably couldn't even think of before you released your software. But what's important is knowing that it's going to fail and then being prepared for dealing with those failures. So being responsive to people's concerns. And one probably important thing from my personal perspective is owning up to them, not trying to hide the fact that this software has failures. And then once you've found those problems, releasing often. And that's another important part of, I guess, the lean startup, is that you're always releasing new versions of your software, getting it out there so that people can experience the new version and fixing bugs in that time.
Yeah, that also seems to make sense as well. I mean, I think that last point about owning up to them is something probably certain business owners, me included, struggle with sometimes, because you're so invested in it and you feel like it's, you know, part of you. So almost saying that it's failing is almost a thing against you personally, yes, and it can definitely be difficult to sort of own up sometimes. So having that at the front of mind that you should always be owning up and getting onto it quickly and making sure you're giving good customer service seems to be a good.
Yeah, sorry, just so on that. I think an important – there's some cultural things that exist in Australia too around failure. You know, Australians generally, you know, whether it be tall poppy or whatever reason, but we're not great on trying things and expecting something of it to fail. So culturally you have to deal with that as well, and you have to kind of battle your own internal sort of feelings about this, as well as, you know, others in the community who say, well, why are you doing this? It's probably going to fail anyway. But that relates not only to just lean startup, but entrepreneurship generally in Australia. And it's, I'm get on my soapbox a little bit here, because it's, in my opinion, in Australia, we are well placed, probably better than many other places in the world, to be entrepreneurs. The way that our system works, where you can, you know, lose all of your money on a venture and still be able to feed the kids, have a house over your, have a roof over your head, and still be able to get health care, is better than 99% of the world. And so I think it's a factor that we need to embrace that failure, embrace the fact that we are going to fail in certain things, and recognize that when that happens, you're actually in the best place in the world for failure to occur, and not be end up living in a car, as we've seen happen for people who aren't even entrepreneurs in the States and all around the world over the last few years with the, you know, the financial crisis. You know, people who thought they had a stable job, lose the job, can't find any more work, and end up out on the out in the street. So in Australia, thankfully enough, we've avoided most of that at a macro level. But at a micro level, I think it's an important thing that people need to just accept that they can and will fail in something, and just have a go, because it's so much more satisfying than just doing the 9 to 5.
Yeah, absolutely. And a concept that just that I think relates well to this is, I've heard described as fail forward. So trying to make sure when you do fail that you're actually learning something from it. So you can sort of apply that to your business, or change something, or, you know, fix something or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons that I did the blog post and why I'm more than happy to spend the time with you today is because, you know, some of those things, the mistakes that we made, I don't want others to make those mistakes. And so, I think with a lot of what's happening in Adelaide over the last few years, you know, Silicon Beach, you know, these co-working groups that are setting up, there's a real vibe around entrepreneurship and startups now in Adelaide that didn't exist in the past. And so I think it's important that that we all do work together to pool our learnings so that we can all collectively grow this opportunity of Australia being and Adelaide being a great place to have a startup.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting, and I've been going to various events lately, and through another project I've just started where I'm going to be interviewing various entrepreneurs in Adelaide. It's really interesting seeing the community grow and concepts like what we're talking about today with the Lean Startup methodologies, I think are really going to be important for people who have that energy and have that that desire to start something, but you want to make sure that you're doing it in the right way, so there's not much waste, and so you're listening to your market as you've said, and coming up with something that's going to actually solve some problems, and they're going to importantly pay for, so you can fund your venture and get some value out of it in the end.
Definitely.
I just wanted to touch on briefly again the minimum viable product idea. You sort of explained already what it is to begin with, and you mentioned the Dropbox video idea. Can you just expand on minimum viable product a little bit? Maybe some other examples of what a minimum viable product could be?
Yeah, look, it is. My experience today with minimum viable product has been it's horses for courses. For some people and in their industry, they have their minimum viable product has to be quite complete before anyone would even consider using it. And that's probably in something like especially if you're talking about technology, where you're traditionally working with late adopters, because late adopters would be less willing to put up with bugs, less willing to put up with issues. So that doesn't mean you go out there and you don't talk to them and find out what those issues are and try to build that in. But your minimum viable product in that regard might be a lot more full-featured, or at least well-rounded than it might be for, say, something if you were targeting early adopters in the software industry who know that things are going to fail, know what the term alpha and beta means and what that would mean for their data, know that if you're using a service, they're going to have to back up their own data because it may fail at any point in time. So you do have to think about who your target market is and what it is that they might be looking to do. But the way that I've done it recently is really just to develop a list of features or user stories that describe how the system should function, and working with the market in terms of finding out what those features should be is really just keep looking over those list of features and come back to what you think, do we really need this for people to start using the product, for people to start buying the product, and constantly checking your own assumptions about what it is that you think you're going to be building for people and validating those assumptions with the market and getting it out there. So when it comes to a web-based software, obviously things like a minimum viable product would, for example, be someone's going to have to log in, someone's going to have to do something with your app, whatever the key feature is of your app, and be able to log out. If that's it that you need to do with your app, then that may be your minimum viable product. But in other cases, you actually may want to include in your minimum viable product the acceptance of people's money. If you think that you need to do that before you can launch, then that's, again, horses for courses. So I think from my experience, the two definitions of the minimum viable product, one is sales-based. So what's the minimum product that we can release that people are going to start buying this solution? And the other is one in which, which is from the Dropbox example, one in which people are actually just going to start providing you feedback on it. Either of those could be determined a minimum viable product, but it just really depends upon what it is that you're trying to achieve. I'd be aiming for the latter if I could get something out there as soon as you can that is going to extract some feedback from people and get some direct, so that you're actually using your product and heading towards the goal of them buying it eventually, I think is a better approach than waiting too long until you have something that then people are going to start using straight away and buy straight away.
I mean, it's probably not a perfect example, but when I first started the podcast, I had this idea. I mean, I had the idea for a while, and then I was putting it off heaps, and then I thought I'll try and take a bit of a lean approach to this, and mm-hmm. I'll just record a podcast, and you know, I just did it on my iPhone, which is probably not the best technology, and then I thought I'd try and improve it over time, you know, with the thinking that the main part of the product is really the content, not so much you want a basic level of sound quality, but the other sort of bits and pieces that sort of surround that are sort of extra bits which I can add later, whereas the minimum viable product, I guess, is just the content and the sound and getting it out there.
And that's really good, because we'll see, I mean, what you've shown there as well is that, you know, what you're doing with your podcast and the blog and all of that is not specifically a business. It's about, you know, it's a marketing sort of opportunity or a marketing process that you're following to get, you know, to get people aware of you and to provide that content. So, but you can still apply the Lean Startup thinking to that. And so that's where, to go back to, I think, your very first question of where it can be applied. I think if you start thinking about what the methodology is teaching you or trying to achieve, you can apply it in a lot of different facets of business, and not just around the making of money.
Absolutely. That's been a really great interview. Trevor, thanks a lot for coming on.
No worries.
I think this will be really useful for definitely people who are looking to start a business, but also people who are in business and they're looking to sort of improve their processes for releasing new products or for sort of leaning themselves up.
Yep.
if anyone wants to find out more about you and sort of what you're doing, where's the best place to do that?
Well, you can obviously find me on places like LinkedIn. I'm on there. And Sarugo.net is my company. So have a look there. And I would love to help people understand more about their current idea for going to market and can help them make that happen.
Fantastic. I'll have some links in the show notes for this episode with to your blog post and then also to your website and your social profiles there where people can find you. Thanks again for coming on and have a good one.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Take care, mate.
That brings us to the end of another podcast. For more information about this episode and all our others, head to our website, www.webmarketingadelaide.com.au.